right, don't blink for the next hour, because we got a ton to get into on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, in for Derek Brandale, Austin Mackey, Jake the Snake Schultz, also up there. Wherever you're watching and listening, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, watching on Sportsnet 360 or Sportsnet Plus. Like I said, don't blink. And download us if you can't catch us live. And remember, our show is always brought to you by Bet365. It's a Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
Serious day for Oilers fans today. I bet they're feeling very serious.
I can't imagine. This is almost why I would never want the Leafs to make it, because I can't imagine how sad I would be right now if I was an Oilers fan.
Would sad be the emotion?
Depressed. Everyone.
We're going to go to Charlie Huddy in about 5 or 10 minutes, but we'll dissect as much as we can before we get to Charlie Huddy. Of course, former NHL defenseman, 5-time Stanley Cup champion, member of the Edmonton Oilers Hall of Fame, and also a guy that knows Paul Maurice quite well, working close to 10 years with him in Winnipeg.
He's the perfect guest for
today. He is going to be great, because we got a lot of defensive questions.
Why, thank you, Barney.
To ask. But, like, where do we start? Do we start with the Oilers being down 2-0? Do we talk about injuries? Do we talk about potential supplementary discipline? Do we talk about Barkov? I don't know where to start.
Let's start with what happened. What happened last night? The Panthers, they win 4-1. They come back for the 7th time to win a game in this postseason, which ties the record for most comebacks in a postseason. What did you make of the way that game shook out compared to what you expected to shake out last night?
Well, first of all, I'm watching the Oilers go up 1-0, which was a perfect remedy to get back into the series and tie it at 1-1.
Even a bit of a softie by Bob standards?
I think a softie was even more of a sign that this was going to be a decent night for the Oilers.
You could get him.
He's human. He let in a bad goal. Where can you snowball that into momentum? Where can you finally feel good about yourself that, hey, he's not stealing this one? You don't let, and it was a horrible goal.
Very high five hole shot.
Like, unlike what we've seen in the last 6-8 weeks out of Bobrovsky, like, I can watch it 10 times and I still don't know how it went through him.
It's actually the only time he's given up a five hole goal in the postseason. Yeah. So, yep, things were off to a good start.
Like, it bounced off his chest and through his five hole somehow. Yeah. It was awful.
But it wasn't the sign.
No, it was not.
It was not the sign. And pretty much the way the Florida Panthers have been disposing of teams, they stay consistent.
Stick with it.
They stick with it. They don't panic. They smother. And not much room yet again for Connor McDavid or Draisaitl.
No. We talked in this playoffs how hard it is for the elite guys to create once the other team has targeted you, circled you, made you the guy. Florida probably better than any team in the NHL at taking away ice and space. So, yeah, we got 1 point for McDavid. He got an assist on the Ekholm goal, and nothing from Draisaitl yet. That's a bit of a story that they can't score one goal in 2 games. What do you have here, Sammy? Marks the first time the Oilers have scored one goal in a 2-game span since February of 22. So that's a big part of it, is the defensive side of things. And from there, I don't think they're giving up anything more than usual on the other end of it. Just how do you score goals?
From like a fan's perspective, I came out of that first game being like, if I'm an Oilers fan, be like, God, we needed that one. Mm-hmm. Because the Oilers played so great in the first 2 periods of that game. I thought the Panthers shut it down a little bit in the third and they kind of tightened it up a bit. But
if you just... They gave up a goal 3 minutes in. Yeah.
But if you find a way in that first game to get a couple by Bobrovsky, you win that first one. Like, this was always this, what the Panthers did last night is the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
What they looked like in the first 2 periods of that game one were not like them. And it was like you had a chance to get them at home on a home ice and you just didn't get it.
Yeah.
And now it feels like, are you going to beat the Panthers 4 out of 5 times here?
Here's the bright spot. If you're trying to sell it to your friends and you're an Oilers fan, whatever, Barkov hurt is a big story. And I know, I'm not saying he's not going to play. I think Maurice even said that, you know, if things keep progressing, he maybe will. But Barkov would be big. if he's not doing great. Ekblad's ankle looked not great. I know Oilers have their injuries, but that would be big.
Absolutely huge. Okay, we're going to get to Charlie Hudi for sure.
But yeah, call him in about 5 minutes or so. But
what are your overall thoughts? I was quite surprised, if not shocked, that there wasn't more talk post-game about the hit and whether or not they even thought it was suspendable. Like, it was not, it was an afterthought. Everybody was like, just, it's a nothing play.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to debate that.
We can.
But what I'm here to tell you is that their best skater got hit in the head and couldn't return. That's a story that has to lead to, where are you on the severity of the blow, and would that warrant a look by the league? And at least a conversation.
It's not going to happen.
Nobody wanted to even touch it.
Maybe if it were Warren Fogel, who also got ejected for the knee, if he had thrown it, maybe we'd be talking about, or Connor Brown or someone else. It's Leon Draisaitl. You think they're going to suspend Leon Draisaitl
for the
in the playoffs, three, heading three in
the
Edmonton?
Finals? Yeah.
Let me tell you something.
Barkov would have to be dead.
If they announce tomorrow that Barkov's out with a broken jaw and he's done for the rest of the series, yeah, they are going to look at it.
I do think you're right that it's injury dependent here.
It's all injury dependent.
They could do that? Like, well, doesn't it have to be announced? Like, there's no timeline. So if they say that
and I'm not suggesting that that's going to happen, but what I am here to tell you is that nothing's been decided by the league. Nothing's been said by the Florida Panthers. If the damage is so severe and he can't play game three or game four, or he's lost for the rest of the series, how does that make you feel differently about the blow to the head?
Well, it does make you feel differently, for sure, right? Taking out the other team's captain and best player with a hit. I tend to want to penalize intent more than result. And to me, that's not a vicious play.
But it wasn't even a penalty until he stayed down, to your point.
Hey, do they just make it up as they go? Like, I thought a penalty is a penalty.
There was no whistle. There was no penalty. There was no official arm up, to your point of just looking like any other kind of finished check until he stayed down. And then the officials blew the whistle. And to your point, once the whistle's gone, they can go revisit anything they want. High sticks, they can go, they can get together and say, hey, did I miss something here? And it's like, yeah, you missed it. He drove his elbow into his jaw.
They're saying all the right things, Bart. Obviously Draisaitl saying no malicious intent, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But Maurice did say today that the good news is it's not worse today. And so if it progresses like they do, sitting here today, I feel like Barkov is going to play game three.
Would you like to hear Paul Maurice's initial thoughts on the Leon hit on Barkov?
Yes.
Okay, so clip three, please, Austin.
Paul, I do want to ask you about the evolution defensively of this team since you've arrived, but just quickly, because I think you're holding back. How do you feel about the hit on Barkov?
This isn't the Oprah Winfrey show. My feelings don't matter.
It's a good quote.
Oprah?
Yeah, it's a good quote.
Does that make Pierre LeBrun Oprah?
I don't know. But we have more from Maurice
on this. And then today, with a little bit of the next day clarity, he was asked again, and this is from clip four, please, Austin.
Well, I would view it without as much emotion, it's done. Refs called a penalty on the ice. The league looks at just about every single hit. They'll make their decision, and then we aren't dealing with that anymore today. And part of that is just the discipline, mental discipline to leave the game where it is regardless of the result. And I understand why you guys want to talk about it. It's a story. Shit, you guys have 7 weeks of this stuff, so you've got to grind too, but I'd stay out of it. It's done for me. It's all done.
See, here's the biggest problem with our game is that we cannot see intent and we cannot see the physical effect of a hit.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that I always kind of knew I could do pretty well in my career was I could disguise stuff.
Yeah.
And I could make it look like it's a nothing burger. Oops. And I could hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff still goes on.
Yes, it does. I think unless you've done it, you don't know that. I mean, hey, I was a pretty clean player.
Yeah, I was not.
But even as a clean player, though, of course, there are moments when you're like, all right, mm-hmm. F that guy. You know, we're going to get a little greasy here.
So the example to me now is the Fogel neon Lusteranen.
Yeah.
So this guy goes down like he's done. Okay? Like he's moments away from season-ending surgery.
By that reaction, it was like, oh,
right?
Boy. Something
so
in the CL is gone.
It changes the whole vibe of the call on the official. And yes, did he lead with a knee? Yes.
It's a kneeing penalty for sure.
But if the guy gets up in a relatively decent amount of time, he's not out of the game.
No.
And then on the opposite side, something like Barkov could look so innocent, and that guy does not come back.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do we got to do? Do we have to pause for an hour while a guy gets x-rays so they can come back and say, he's not hurt, he's fine. All right, 2-minute minor.
Yeah.
Like, what are we left with here?
And I thought, I know we got Charlie on the line, but I thought that the Bennett one on Bouchard behind the net, I thought that was maybe the worst intent of all three hits, where he threw the knee out on him, but Bouchard gets right up, so they get the penalty, and that's it. But anyways,
I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
All right, we got him?
Got him.
Let's welcome in 5-time Stanley Cup champion, Charlie Huddy. We're thrilled to have you on the show. Charlie, how are you, friend?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So let me go back to your era. Who was really good at disguising hurting guys?
And was it
you? Would number 11 come to mind?
Yeah, he would come to mind, but I'm guessing sometimes he didn't disguise it very well. But he would be one of the guys for sure. Another guy probably maybe lots of people would know, but like a Kevin McClellan or somebody like that was our fourth line center back then, and a tough guy that would kind of get around the ice and get that sneaky little elbow out or sneaky little forearm out.
Yeah, it does happen out there. So, Charlie, we'll get your thoughts on how it's gone for the Oilers so far through two games of the Stanley Cup final. Been in a couple of games, obviously, but haven't got the result.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm kind of like everybody. The first game, you know, they had some bad luck around the net. The goalie was obviously fantastic, which happens in playoff hockey. That's why you win Stanley Cups. You get a hot goaltender. And, you know, they just couldn't get anything in. And then they come out last night. And then, you know what, Florida tightened up again, I thought. And I know Paul Maurice, he's in that room getting those guys to lock down that slot area and getting it shut down so there's no slot shots and stuff like that. I know that we talked a lot about it, and I'm sure he's doing that right now. And, I mean, I think it showed last night in the ozone. I mean, the Oilers forwards had a hard time penetrating into that area. And then you get around that outside. Florida's keeping to the outside, but then you get around that outside and you hold on to it too long. Then you try to force a pass, and then you know what happens. It gets going the other way, and nothing ever gets to the net. But, I mean, I guess the coaching in me still, I looked at the stats this morning, and, I mean, the forwards of the Oilers had 6 shots on net. You know, McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Hyman, and then the rest of the guys, you know, Fogel's out, but the rest of the guys had no shots on net, and it's tough to win a hockey game when only 3 forwards get shots on net.
We're talking to Charlie Huddy, Hall of Famer with the Edmonton Oilers, and now watching a very tough climb by the Edmonton Oilers to get back in this series. Charlie, safe to say that Connor, in terms of the space that's allowed for him, he hasn't seen anything like this, at least in the first 3 rounds here. What's the key to closing up a gap here, and why is Florida a lot more successful than Edmonton so far in the first 2 games?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I don't think he's seen anything like the way Florida's handling. I mean, Florida's got some some D that can move, like, you know, Forsling and Ekblad. They can move, and it's all about the gap. I think that the initial rush by the Oilers, I mean, Florida's tracking back really hard. I mean, I watched the game last night, and there was some times where two forwards were coming in on four Florida guys, or even three Oilers forwards coming in on four Florida guys. So they're getting back there, and they've done a great job on McDavid of having switch offs and having closed the gap and taken away time and space. And the other thing is when that puck gets along the wall, Florida's got a second quick in there really quick before Edmonton gets their second quick in there. So they're able to get, you know, McDavid or Dreisaitl or whoever it may be up against the wall. And then the second Florida guy comes in there and gets the puck, and then they're on the move going the other way. But I think it's not over. I always told RD, you got to give yourself a buffer on guys that got a lot of speed. If you get those guys, want you to get up tight on them, like a McDavid and Dreisaitl, they want you to get up tight on them so that they can cut back and spin off you. And then as a defenseman, you got no chance. So I used to say, give yourself a 1 or 2 foot buffer. And at the end of the day, you know what? He's got to go through you to get to the net. So give yourself that extra room. And I think Florida's done a real good job of doing that.
Charlie, you were an assistant coach with Paul Maurice for a lot of years and would have some unique insight to the things that he likes to do. Is there anything that comes to mind when it comes to the way that he likes to coach and things he likes his teams to do that you're seeing play out so far in this series?
You know what? I think just getting we always say, pushing the right buttons on the right guys and making the right line change at the right time. He always seemed to do that in Winnipeg. You know, he'd move one guy in, move one guy out, and I think he's done that a little bit, especially with Rodriguez. But, I mean, he gets in that room before the game, and he'd come in that coach's office, and he'd say, go, we, you know, kind of bug him a bit because we knew how he operated. You know, what do you got for them? And he goes, you know what, I'm not sure. It'll come to me, though. And then he'd start walking down the hallway towards the dressing room, and then all of a sudden he'd turn back, and he'd kind of, like, look at us, and then he'd walk in that room and he'd go in there, and it would be an unreal pregame speech to get the guys fired up and get the guys going, and not overkill, but just enough to get to hit the right button and get you going. And you don't need that right now in the Stanley Cup Finals. I think he said that you just go in there and give him a few pointers or whatever, just a few reminders on what we need to do to win the hockey game. And I think he was great at that, and I think just and the way he handles the bench. I mean, he's got those guys dialed in. I know that year that we lost to Vegas in the conference, our whole game was about forecheck. Get in on the forecheck, cause some turnovers, and then we'll go from there. And I think he's got that built into Florida right now, where those guys are getting pucks in the right spot so they can go back in and get the pucks or the hard rim, hard for the Oilers defense to handle it. So he's got them in the right spot, and they're getting there.
Is there anything else, Charlie, that you can see from afar on Paul Maurice that's maybe given him a leg up from his days in Winnipeg? Like the difference between getting Florida maybe over a hump with two more wins compared to what he couldn't do in Winnipeg? Is that just strictly players, talent, character in the players?
Yeah, you know, I really want to go there, but yeah, you know what? It'd be all the above. I mean, I think he just felt that he didn't have. I mean, I was the most shocked guy in the world when he called me at 4:30, yeah, just after we had practice, and I went home, and he said, "I'm done." I'm like, "What? You're done?" Like, nobody does that. But you know what? He feels the game, and he knows his players, and he just knew that there was nothing left that he could do to get him over the hump for whatever reason. And you know what? He felt it was time to move on, and now he's gone into a fresh start. I listen to those guys talk about him. Chuck talks about him a lot. He's the best coach he's ever had. He's great, and it's the right environment for him. He got in there at the right time, and he had a game plan going in there, and those guys have followed. He's got a great lineup, a lot of depth from the first line to the fourth line, and he's got defense that are playing the game for him.
So looking at the Oilers D, so it sounds like you spent a lot of time coaching up defense. you know, they maybe don't have, the Oilers don't have pure defenders necessarily. Ekholm can do it very well, but, you know, there are some challenges. Nurse, CeCe, even Bouchard at times. You know, how would you coach up a group like that from here where they're not getting the offense, not giving up a ton, but they don't necessarily have, I don't know, they don't have the D that Florida does personnel-wise.
Yeah, you know what, I think when you have that kind of the D that they have, I mean, Ekholm's been scoring, Bouchard, obviously. But the other guys, it's just that you want them to defend first, and that's the most important thing. Like, you get into trouble when you start to try to do too much. You know, you think you can maybe make that extra move or whatever it may be, or the extra play on the offensive blue line to get, you know, to get pucks through or whatever the case may be. But, I'd get those guys. You just got to play within yourself, and you don't want to do too much. I mean, that's when you really start to get into trouble and things happen. Yeah, you're going to get some breaks. I mean, I think Kulak had, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 shots on net last night. So, I mean, it's, you know, you can play within yourself, and I'd get them to, you know, you're going to go through stretches where you have some rough shifts or you have some rough games, but you got to cut it off. And especially this time of the year, obviously you can't have a string of a bunch of bad games, but you got to be able to cut it off and get back out there and be ready for the next game or be ready for the next shift to do what you have to do.
We're talking to 5-time Stanley Cup champion Charlie Huddy, member of the Edmonton Oilers Hall of Fame. So, Charlie, is there anything, any comparable to maybe what Bouchard's feeling, like Paul Coffey felt all those years in terms of being the point producer and having to come up with big numbers for the team to have success? Could he be feeling that, Bouchard?
Yeah, you know what, I would think so. I mean, I can't speak for him, but you would think that that's, especially when you're not scoring goals. I mean, if they were scoring a bunch of goals and everything was going good, then probably that's the last thing on your mind is doing that. I got to defend now and keep the puck out of our end, but or out of our net. But when it's not, you know what it's like. The media's going to go in there and say, well, you're not producing off the offensive blue line. You're not getting the power play going the way it should be going and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's a Stanley Cup playoffs. It's hard to get points in this, yeah, in this league. You know that. And it just doesn't come. And if it doesn't, you just can't manufacture them. They're gonna come. They're gonna happen. And you gotta wait on it. I mean, it's just not there. So I'm sure he's feeling it. And it's the same old story. You try to do too much, and then bad things happen, right? So you just gotta stick with the game plan that got you all those points. Like, I mean, shooting the puck, like I thought on the power play, it's not going right now. I mean, what do you tell every? I never ran a power play, but luckily I got on it 2 or 3 times when I was in Edmonton, but with all those other guys. But it's like anything, right? It's like, if it's not going, just get the puck to the net. And you know, Hyman's going to be standing in front of the net and something's going to go in off somebody's leg or whatever the case may be. But yeah, you pass it around and hoping that something's going to open up. And Florida's done an unreal job. They're not, I mean, Barkov's such a smart player and taking away that seam pass, and you know, they get one to Leon, but he's right on the goal line, and Bob knows it's coming, and he's already over on it. I mean, it's getting pucks to the net, and then things will open up, right? Once you start shooting the puck, then the seams will open up, and everything happens after that. But you need a starting point, and hopefully that they can get that thing back on track, because we all know it's won them a lot of hockey games, and they're going to need it to win games now.
Last one for me, Charlie. Just looking at the struggles for McDavid and Draisaitl and getting points, what are some things that defenses do against elite players? Like, what are some things when you're circling a guy and saying, we got to shut this down? Obviously, you know, you want to put body on him where you can. Is there anything else that's making it that much harder for these guys to do what they usually do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, first thing's the body, but easier said than done. I mean, it's tough to get those guys. I think just going back to what I said about, like, when we played them in Winnipeg, but he had Draisaitl and McDavid together a lot, so I had gone through a whole bunch of tape and put about 5 or 6 minutes of those two guys playing together and showed our defense, you know, just the tendencies that those guys, how they work off of each other, how they cut back, how they're looking for each other. You know, is it, you know, puck behind a back pass or backhand, whatever it may be. But, I mean, just going back to what I said earlier, I think the biggest thing is it's just not getting too tight on those guys. If you can get them in there, get on the body right away, yes. But soon they invite that thing. They're like the Sedins. The Sedins, remember, they just wanted you to come in and get on the body, and then they'd spin off you. And one of them would find the other one, and then it'd be going to the net, and the puck would be there. But it's that buffer that you need to have to be able to, you know, keep, you know, one hand on your stick, be able to knock some pucks down, and then use your hand to be able to kind of to guide them a little bit. But, I mean, that's what they're looking for. So I think that, again, Florida's done a great job of that. And you know what? The forwards have helped out a lot. I mean, they get you know, McDavid and Draisaitl, they get climbing up on the top of those circles, and the Florida forwards are there being able to cut them off and getting a stick on it. So, I mean, you know, you got to give the Florida forwards credit too for their coverage in the D zone.
Charlie, we really appreciate you making time for us today, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate it.
It is Edmonton Oilers great Charlie Huddy.
Go ahead.
Just to follow up, it's to me, the focus on McDavid is to make sure that he doesn't have the access to the net mm-hmm. as far as him handling the puck. You know how many times he's turned away mm-hmm. and, you know, gone to the outside or back to the perimeter, handle the puck. They're okay with that.
Yeah.
They're not chasing him up there. They're like, go and handle the puck all you want up there.
Yeah,
Turn away.
He had it a ton last night, but he just wasn't getting to the sweet spot.
You know, these guys in these situations who start to have problems in playoffs, the holes aren't there that are usually there. They don't see it. You know, you're beyond the first guy that they have to beat. There might be another layer, so they don't even try to get in. I feel like you still have to try to get in, and that might be the quest for McDavid.
He has tried on occasion, and then it looks like he's trying too hard because he's lost the puck a couple of times. It's into traffic, and it's like...
They're a great defensive team. Right? They really are. It's hard.
I thought Ekblad, in particular last night, was just so good.
Yeah.
Like, so
I'm not a huge Ekblad fan.
But he was excellent last night.
But their ability to tighten up and close the gap is night and day from the Edmonton Oilers. Mm-hmm. Like, another goal. Like, it's not the hard forecheck that's creating offense for Florida. It's breaking the puck out of their own zone. Mm-hmm. They're scoring 180 feet. And Mikkola's a perfect example. Go back and watch it. It's literally 4 seconds that the puck is in Florida's own zone. Evander Kane goes behind the net when there's no reason to. McLeod is a second forechecker who has a horrible, chooses a horrible path to squeeze off the boards. Mm-hmm. Connor Brown is weak on the board side, and then they give up the middle of the ice and they're gone. And who scores the goal? Evander Kane's man, Mikkola, because Evander decides to go behind the net and cover nobody.
They're at the point with Kane where they may have to have a conversation of, like, if he's not healthy enough to play should he play?
They're not giving up those goals. Florida are not giving up that type of goal.
Yeah.
That's the difference in the game.
It is so far.
Yeah, he only played 10 minutes last night.
Is that right? Yeah. You may have to think about him not playing game 3.
Yeah.
But hey,
kept talking about last night standing up on the bench. Like,
they're obviously hurt, right? They're hurting.
But like Ekblad hurt, Barkov hurt, you know, Lustarainen hurt. Like, it's part of the
deal. I was surprised how quickly Ekblad came back from that one because the way his leg got caught.
Well, his history is not good.
For sure.
It looked bad for his ankle.
Just to my earlier point, like Florida, they're not giving up the blue line.
Yeah.
Okay, and they're not scared to challenge, and they're so aggressive. Their blue line, all of them are so aggressive in the neutral zone, and if they are, there's a forward to back them up.
I'm going to simplify this for all of us. Mm. The Oilers need to win the special teams battle. We said that going into the series. Everyone said that because Florida's so physical, they need to do well on the special teams. Florida gets power play goal. The Oilers are 0-7 on the power play. This could easily in game 3 be like the Oilers the players are all talking about the hit three posts. We could be talking about it differently. They could put a couple in on the power play, tighten up on the PK, and all of a sudden this is a different series.
You're so right.
Just that special
team. The margin of error, including specialty teams, like it's not much. The Edmonton Oilers are not far off from winning a hockey game here.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
But if it's not going, you cannot lose some individual battles. And again, you're 2-1. Okay. Rodriguez's redirect.
Yeah.
Go watch Bouchard along the wall get eaten up like a hot knife through butter. That's not happening on the Florida blue
before
line.
I know we got to do some other stuff.
No, let's,
I want to hear the clip on Evan Rodriguez that Paul Maurice has there. Maybe it's not interesting, but he's worth a conversation, is he not?
No, absolutely.
All right, clip two, please, for Maurice.
Not deferring to stars because early in his first tour with the Barkov line, I felt he did. And it's understandable. You're a new player coming to an organization that is skilled, can make plays. The analytics on that line were always exceptionally good. But if there was a critique that I thought at times he deferred and didn't need to do that. So what he's done is he went on a world tour of our lineup and played with just about everyone. And found his game, and maybe these are questions more for Evan than anybody else, but the confidence to be specific about who you are as a player and then confident in that. Not a lot more, but he's become, I mean, at this point now in the playoffs alone, he's played all three positions.
Like, that's the type of guy, when you have a successful season, you're like, that guy mattered.
Yep. But they're all in the lineup.
Yeah. And Lundell. Not tendered by Kyle Dubas.
Right. Lundell is.
Lundell's another one.
Blue Serenans.
No. Oh, good too. Carter Verhaeghe could not check his hat like at the door 3 or 4 years ago. Okay. Now he's a friggin' star.
Yeah.
Okay. That guy competes, he battles hard. I assure you, Sammy, your Leaf fans. Mm. That wasn't remotely the guy that they saw.
No,
you know, years ago.
When he goes to two separate places, it's hard to be.
Yeah, when everyone goes, we're all good. Right.
They're loaded. With
I'd be
those
lying if it didn't hurt
guys. JB, their whole lineup.
I know
their whole lineup.
Rodriguez. Rodriguez was a great example.
Was he a Leaf for like 5 seconds?
Rodriguez was in Rochester, and Dubas would have seen him a ton. Same with Verhaeghe. He was in Syracuse
for a Pittsburgh trade
for Kapanen.
But they all compete. They all play hard.
I do think there's something to, you're going to a place where the important players are structured, like Barkov and Chuck, and there's a culture, and Ekblad's been there. It's easier to step into lineups like that and have success.
It's just, and like that's how you win a cup. You
leaders, look at, alpha dog.
He's got 11 points. He's got 6 goals in this run. That's how you win a cup.
Yeah.
With a guy that's
third
under,
line or
that just lights it up.
Right.
Right? And yeah, so, how worried here? Like, do you think the Oilers can get back in this, or?
I do. It ain't over. Go back home, you get a couple of special teams goals, and.
I said Cats in 5, and I still feel that way.
Do you have any McDavid clips today?
I do. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back with game time.
The McDavid clip,
I want the McDavid clip.
Yeah, perfect.
All right.
We'll do game time, we come back in that clip.
You heard the man. More Real Kipper and Bourne after these words.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Simon McKee. All right, it's game time.
All right, before game time,
got a contest for us.
Rogers has announced an exciting new national contest, Bring Stanley Home, to send a Rogers customer and hockey fans from across Canada to the Stanley Cup final in Edmonton. Rogers customers have the chance to win 10 VIP trips to attend Game 4 in Edmonton Saturday, June 15th. This prize also includes travel and accommodations, plus premium viewing at a game day concert featuring Shania Twain.
Wow.
Man, I feel like a woman. Okay, outside Rogers Place. Visit rogers.com/Stanley Cup to enter for your chance to win.
God,
for more details.
They gotta win game three.
Shania Twain.
We just mutually winced at the game four part.
Like, yeah.
No. I winced at his reading.
Oh, yeah. I was
that was a horrible reading up until you got to Shania.
I'm fumbling.
Then you went big and large. Then you got professional.
Hey, listen. I'm still bumbling through that 365. I've been doing it every day. I didn't get here because of a good reader voice.
This is the worst non-professional show out there.
Terrible.
Or the best, one of the two.
I hope it's that.
It is truly remarkable that I'm here. I don't know how I made it here, but I'm here.
No one's here for literacy.
We have a coffee every day, say the same thing.
Yeah, it's true. I love you, boys. All right, now it's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, I know it's another couple days until game three. So I'm just going to quickly sneak in a couple golf picks because the U.S. opens this weekend. One of the best golf tournaments of the year. Father's Day, always a great time. Love it. Hopefully a competitive game four where the Rogers customer gets to see Shania Twain play. And a hockey game, I guess. But it's crazy the odds for this now because Scottie Scheffler was 4.5 to 1 for the Masters. He was 4.5 to 1 for the PGA Championship. He is down to 3 to 1 to win.
You can't bet that.
But why?
You can't bet that.
I think you can.
This is not whatever the opposite of value is. All the like golf, I'm sure the betting people are like, yeah. You can't bet one golfer versus the field at 3 to 1.
But he's probably going to win.
But he isn't prime Tiger.
I think it's a
real. So you got me in a pool now, and I went in it again.
Yeah, I did I'm like, too. I joined. Hooked.
What is it?
Shout out Brandon Miller in Kelowna, BC there. It's our Miller's it's Majors.
25 bucks. You pick like 14 guys. Yeah. You count eight.
Yeah.
I hate this. because now I'm in it, and I check the thing every like 5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like. Consuming my life on weekends.
How'd you do last event?
I think I finished like 45 out of like 200.
Oh, I was going to say out of 38, 45.
No.
So anyways, I think he took Scheffler out.
Nobody can pick him.
Wow, I actually love that move.
Because who wouldn't, right? It takes the whole top tier out of play. Yes. Everyone would pick him. So
I think there's a way that you can bet without Scheffler too.
Yeah, so. That's a good way to bet. It's
anyways,
like winner minus Scheffler.
Outside of that, I don't mind Colin Morikawa at 14 to 1. Been really good recently. Xander Schauffele got over the hump at the PGA Championship. Don't mind him at 11 to 1. And a little bit of a longer shot. I was going to give out Ludvig Åberg, but his putting hasn't been great.
You got anything Canadian for us?
I'm looking down.
How's your boy Hadwin?
Give me a sec. Got to go down. Got to go down the list here.
He was good last week, right, Hadwin?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, he was second. If you want to bet Adam Hadwin, he is 125 to 1 to win the United States
Open. And you were saying that Hadwin is now one of our two Canadians in the lead to go to the Olympics.
Yeah. So he needs another good finish here to get ahead of Connors and beat Nick Taylor. And there you go. All right. And that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Don't interrupt
the
hockey
reading. Bets? Like literally zero?
There's no hockey games for 2 days. I think the Oilers are going to win. There's got days.
We'll do that Thursday.
I know we got a clip of Connor McDavid coming up.
We do.
I want to give a shout out to him because I think, first of all, he's got a ton of patience for the media in the Stanley Cup final. Maybe that's just, you know, I'm here. I might as well soak in a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
Very accommodating. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mail in his answers, I don't think.
Nope.
I've been around a few guys where, like, shortest answers, get me back in the shower.
Would you prefer that?
No. It's his call.
Yeah.
If he's comfortable with it, then I think for us, it's
awesome.
It's good. It's great. It's great for the game. It's great for the media. It's all good. But, they hold him there, and he's not in any rush to leave, and he thinks about his answers, and I think we have one of them right now.
Yep. Connor McDavid clip one there, Austin, for us, please.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. It's another opportunity for our group to come together and dig our way out. It's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be difficult. And I'm excited to see what our group's made of. I'm excited to see our group come together. I'm excited to see us fight through adversity. And I'm looking forward to people doubting us again. You know, we're good with the backs against the wall.
I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I loved it's supposed to be hard.
Yeah.
Right? It's a reminder that, you know, if it was easy, we'd all be doing it. Mm-hmm. And that stands on anything in life.
Yeah. It's so funny how the context for a quote is so important, which is why people often complain about being taken out of context. Because mm-hmm. the quote itself, I'm looking forward to people doubting us again, sounds defiant, mm-hmm. stubborn, and unflexible. That's not what that was.
Yeah.
That is a clip that's like, okay, we recognize we need to mount up here.
If I'm one of the guys in his team, I'm like, that's our leader. We got to go behind him. We got to fight for that guy. Like that. Yeah. That's a galvanizing quote.
The one that I found most interesting in that was, I'm excited to see what our group is made of.
Yeah.
He left it open-ended. Yeah. It's not a statement.
We'll show you what we're made of.
That was after.
No, but I agree with you that he's like, we're finding out ourselves, and it's a challenge to your room.
Yeah, which, again, you find a way to tie the series 2-1, or you go down 3-0, it's revealing to him. He's mm-hmm. he's like everybody else, watching and waiting to see. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Like there's still a question mark for him on what they might be made of.
It's funny. I read, you know, some articles, obviously, about this and how McDavid has to get going and all that. Like, I don't know. We talked about this a little bit, but like McDavid had the puck a lot. He looks to me like himself. He looks dangerous. You know, it's very hard. And this is in these games is when it's not Matthew Tkachuk and Barkov scoring all the goals. It was Evan Rodriguez, mm-hmm. you know, or
Mikula.
It's Mikula. Yeah. You know, it is. These guys will take all the attention and all the gravity.
But nobody,
you need people behind you.
But nobody will remember
who
had territorial advantage, who had the puck more, who looked really close to scoring but didn't. Yep. History will not be kind to Connor McDavid if he goes quietly in four games.
For sure. I agree. In that series, you know, you can't say, this guy doesn't show up in playoffs. His numbers reveal that he very much shows up in playoffs. But you're right. For the Cup final series.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the challenge for these type of players. And I think in game one, I might have used that I thought Barkov outplayed. Maybe outplayed was the wrong word. Maybe the word should have been Barkov outproduced mm-hmm. McDavid at the end of the day. Plus two, minus two, two assists, no points. And that's what will go down in the history books.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll go back and look at the game sheet. You know, Oilers fans won't forget.
Tons of pressure on Connor and Leon to go home. Last change. Like you said, get the power play going. Find a way to put 2, 3, 4 points up mm-hmm. and turn the momentum around.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about the pressure. I mean, he goes out there in front of the media yesterday and just puts even more pressure on himself.
Yeah.
Right? And on the team.
In a positive way.
In a positive way. Like, he's not afraid of it. And I would expect a rather large game three from the Oilers stars. It's going back in game four where I would worry.
That's
an Oilers fan. But anyways.
For sure. Ready to move on?
Sure.
The Carolina Hurricanes make Eric Tulsky the next general manager. Tulsky of internet fame.
He was the... He was more influential than Waddell was in Carolina.
The last few years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. From everything I gathered, it was the owner, Dundon.
Let the record show. He's the first guy to go from internet blogger to...
So he was...
And McDavid.
So he was a blogger.
He was a full-on, like, chemist, I think. Like, he had a full, like, a serious job that he went to university for and did this casually to start. Probably 20 years ago. I don't know what it would have been. And now,
casually, yeah.
Yeah, it's not casual anymore.
Wow.
So that's interesting. Don Waddell has moved on, and Tulsky will have the job. People obviously know that he's into the numbers. We'll see if that affects the type of players they go after. But to your point, if he's already had his fingerprints on everything.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Nothing's really changed.
Nothing's going to change.
This search hits different right now, but I'm doing Carolina Hurricanes cap friendly.
Yeah.
One of my last looks probably here. But
no, it goes till July, I think.
They got a big offseason here for Carolina. Like, it's a
Pesci,
big one.
Chatfield, Natchez,
Martinook, Teravainen, Gensel.
Teravainen.
Yeah.
Gensel. Yeah.
Pesci, Shea.
Tough one to start.
Yeah, it's like, that's a huge offseason to come into and be like, you're the main guy.
Yeah.
So.
In other news, Jim Nill named General Manager of the Year award. Like, sneaking these in during the final, is that a good thing?
But I think they want to do it to make sure we're aware of it rather than doing it. When's the right time?
It seems like it's totally buried. I sat here and I said, do we even want to mention this?
Could it not have been done?
It's just, to me, it's buried.
Yeah.
And it's not like the guy's celebrating it today. The guy got knocked out like last week.
That's the problem with doing it in playoffs.
Does he really care? Like, your team lost.
To me,
between the end of game 82 and game one of the playoffs is when they should announce that award.
You know what the real General Manager of the award, of year award is?
Yeah. The Stanley Cup.
That's the
GM of the year award.
Maybe name it after like the regular season and the playoffs.
Like what? The GM of the year award? Some combo?
I will say though, if you're kind of looking at a team that's set up beautifully for the future and like built like a great farm system and built like a team that's really competitive. And he made some great trades. You got Tanev in there. That was great for them until they lost. Like, you get why he would be it.
But
it does fall on deaf ears at this point where it's like, this guy's a general. And Bill Zito's like, he is?
Yeah, I know.
It's like, are you sure it's not me?
Right. You know who I think it is? It's probably me. But, like, it's also such a weird thing because teams are at different parts of their development. Like, I don't know, did San Jose or Chicago maybe have a better year for moving towards their goals?
Yeah.
You know, like what
Mike
they're trying Greer's to be.
The GM.
I don't know. These guys don't have the same goal. And if the goal is to win, then you're right. It's the Stanley Cup.
He iced the worst team since the 92-93 expansion. So good for him.
You guys, Sammy, you excited about the cap going up to $88 million?
The question I wanted to ask you two about this, and the reason I put it in there, because we kind of mentioned it at the end of the show yesterday, but I wanted to revisit it. How much more money does this mean guys are going to get on July 1? Like $4.5 million isn't that huge of a spike for a cap.
No, it's a 5% raise. Right?
Your Toronto Maple Leafs between Willie Nylander and Matthews.
It's all gone.
It's like every time I get my paycheck, it's already spent.
This is what we were warned when I played, that the difference between the haves and the have-nots. Every time the cap goes up, it's going to go to the top guys. Mm. You're not going to participate much in it at all.
No, it's a stark divide in the NHL for sure.
Yeah.
Is there other leagues like that? I guess it probably is across all leagues. Like the NBA with the bottom guys versus like Giannis making $60 million a year.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's the same football kind of, but...
It's funny because people...
Our league needs the bottom guys more than...
That's a great point. You don't need the 12th bench guy in the NBA as much as you need.
Excellent point.
Evan Rodriguez.
Yeah, I got a few of them over the years.
Oh no, you've been sitting there for dozens of points. Great points.
Yeah. The Leafs. It's going to be interesting, you know, because fans often can't tell the value of a player who's $2 million. Like people, get rid of Alex Kerfoot. He makes three. Or get rid of. Yarncroc or whatever. These guys at that much money, pretty good, pretty effective players, and you do need those guys. So
people would really have turned on Yarncroc.
How do you turn on Yarncroc?
Fan base doesn't love him.
Well,
he's a good regular season player.
He's fine.
You came around on him this year.
I did.
You really started to like him.
Yeah. Well, more so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found him a little spunkier.
Spunkier.
Yes.
Okay.
Last debate, let's talk about these the big hits from last game that everyone's discussing. Just which one to you is the most egregious? Who's the Oilers player through the knee?
I thought the worst one was Bennett.
Warren.
That's what I meant. Fogle. That's what I meant.
I thought Bennett on Bouchard
Bennett,
was the worst.
Fogle and Draisaitl. Any of them really terrible?
No, I thought the Bennett one was bad.
I thought it was awful.
Move on.
It was really dangerous.
You know what's interesting, though?
If Bouchard stays down, he's maybe suspended.
You know, and you made the point, if it was Connor Brown, it's a different story, right, with the hits. But this star on star, it puts the league in a very tough predicament.
I'm not sure
this story's over. If Florida decides to take Barkov out of game three.
I think Leon could watch.
I'm just saying that it would put more pressure on the league.
Yeah, it would.
I'm not saying he would get suspended.
But Leon had this with Pietrangelo too, right? He likes to get into it.
All I'll say is like keep Bennett, your head up with the nail gun Bennett on the ice.
Bennett took out like Marchand, right?
Yep.
In these playoffs.
Was like, yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I do dumb stuff all the time too.
Like Marchand saw stars for 3 days.
Yeah, we gotta go.
We gotta go.
Our thanks to Charlie Huddy. We're back tomorrow.
No, we're not.
Oh,
Thursday.
No, we're not back. Blue Jays tomorrow.
Thursday.